Session number 10601, reel 15.
Mr. Cottier, Reel 17. You were describing your role at Dimapur with the Japanese close by.
Yes. When we detrained, we were informed that Japanese patrols had broken through and were to take up defensive positions immediately. This must have been about 8 o'clock at night.
What was Dimapur like? Was it just a railway yard and a small
town? Yes, more or less, just a real ending, you know, terminus. There was a native population there, not very big, and mostly good sheds, good yards, because this was the terminus, and from there on, goods had to be taken into Burma by cart. So you had a lot of sheds there, storage sheds. So we took up our defensive positions overnight.
Did you dig in?
No, we didn't dig in, because this was only a scare, and I don't think there was any Jap patrols anywhere near Dimapur myself. There was none reported, but that's the report we got. We kept up our positions overnight. Then next morning, the battalion was shuttled up to Kohima, because what had happened, at Kohima, they only had one battalion, the Royal West Kents, who were on peacetime basis. They hadn't mobilised at all, and that was the only men was left to defend Kohima. Well, the Japanese had come through, and they actually had Kohima. Now, whatever troops held Kohima, held India, because Kohima was right on the border. You had your real head there. And even the Japanese troops was issued with maps of India, ready to come at India. So,
can I just ask you? You mentioned the West Kents were on a peacetime basis. What do you mean by that?
Well, when we went up to Kohima to relieve them, we found that some of the dead were wearing peacetime uniform, white belts. And Tobies, you know, pith helmets. And the equipment, they didn't have any Tommy guns or Sten guns, they only had rifles. And obviously, they weren't trained. Of course, the battalion was practically wiped out. So, as I said, the battalion was ferried up. No, I wasn't ferried up. I had to stop at Dimapur, because the train behind us had our vehicles on and motorbikes. And it was my job to stay behind and marshal a transport in this yard, waiting orders to its distribution as to what they wanted up at Kohima.
Did you have any men with you to help you in this task, or were you on your own?
Yes, well, I had my own men. Then I had the MT drivers who was with the vehicles in the second train, you see.
And how many men did you have with you who were your own men?
Four.
Same four.
And but men wasn't a problem. We had the drivers. And it was just a question of when, at what time does the vehicles leave Dimapur to go up to Kohima? Well, at that precise moment, nobody knew actually what the situation was. The battalion was ferried up by LFC vehicles. These are vehicles which belong to the Indian Army, driven by Indian troops, who poor souls had just had a crash course on driving. They were very poor drivers,
In what way?
Well, that no sense of speed, that no sense of distance. They did no farther off the curbstone. You know, you see the bit go on butt up against the curbstone, and when they put the race away, it'd been a rush job.
But you weren't with the battalion with these drivers. You were back.
I was back at Dinapur, and these drivers shuttled the men up to a place called Lancaster Gate. Now, Lancaster Gate was about a mile from Kohima.
When did you join the battalion?
The following day, I joined the battalion, but the MT didn't.
Why was that?
They were kept back because they still didn't know what role they were going to take, because it was just a single road, not a road, you know, winding track. And to get the MT up then, it was going to cause a catastrophe. We couldn't cope with it. At this precise time, things had to be organised like slip roads, sides. Bulldozers would be required to make bays for men to overtake.
So the motor transport stayed at Dimapur?
Yes.
How did you get up there?
On the motorbike.
So you got your motorbike back?
Yes. Next year, we offload all the vehicles. They went into the sheds with the drivers, guarding them overnight. And I set away to come up to rejoin my battalion with my men on motorbikes.
What was the journey like on the motorbikes?
The road was all right, winding road. A sheer drop one side, what we called the cud, sheer drop. And of course, very banky on the other side. In other words, it was a road cut out of a hillside and all S-bends. Every 50 yards was an S-bend. Now, I think the distance from the distance from Dimapur to Lancaster Gate would be about 40 miles. Now, I rode up next morning with the lads and reported, and I got as far as Lancaster Gate and I was stopped by our quartermaster, Buick. There was no mechanisation, no vehicles allowed to go any further than Lancaster Gate. The battalion, this time, was up on the hill at Kohima, relieving the West Kents. That was during the daytime. Now then, I kept down with my men, with the QM staff, what you call Bieschlung, with the QM staff, Quartermaster Tony Buick, ex-RSMan. Nice fellow he was. Now that night, when I kept down, I could hear on the hill shell fire, mortar fire, machine gun fire. And it was terrific. And when I looked up, the whole hill was ablaze, like a huge fire. And we could make head and tail of it. I went back to Buick, because it was easy for me to walk back. We weren't under any danger at Lancaster Gate. And he was in his tent. He had a tent fixed up. And I said to him, I said, do you hear the racket? And he says, yes. He said, looks like the battalion's in trouble. Well, next morning, daylight, even before I got myself pulled together, who should arrive up in a jeep but Major General Grosvenor, the Divi commander. And he was wanting to know what the situation was on the hill, Kohima, because he had no lines of communication. And no one knew. The telephone lines had been cut. Wireless had been smashed. And Buick sent for me. And he said, I want you to take your bike and contact the battalion headquarters and see what the situation is. And the Divi commander arrived, and Buick, Captain Buick, quartermaster, sent for me and told us what the situation was, that the Divi commander was interested in what was going on the hill. He had no information. The telephone wires had been cut, wireless was dead, and he gave me instructions to contact the battalion headquarters and find out what the Machan wanted in the way of supplies. So I left Lancaster Gate on my bike, and I just was getting around the bend when I come under mortar fire, machine gun fire. And I carried on, and around the next bend, here's a bullock lying dead, all bloated out, where the road wasn't very wide, and I had to slow down to get round it, this bullock. However, I managed, and I didn't exactly know the exact point where the battalion had left the road to take up the positions. And consequently, I overshot me mark. And I was stopped by our own men. They were putting bursts of machine gun fire in front of me to stop me. Now, I didn't know who those two men were until last year. I spoke to them, and I didn't know it was them.
How did you know it was British machine gun fire that was going across your bows?
Well, because the machine gun was kicking from us all the way. He wasn't trying to hit us. Like the further back, I could feel the heat of the bullets practically whizzing across, and the two-inch mortar was dropping around us further back. But when I got round the bend, I saw these bursts on the road and they were creeping. I said, I've gone too far. Well, I turned round, came back a few yards, and I jumped off the bike and I just put it aside. And I saw what was like another mule track leading up. And very cautiously, I went up this mule track, and I got the shock of my life. After getting up about 150 yards, I saw my own men, battalion. They were just lying about like zombies.
Were you climbing up a hill?
Yes,
this mule track?
Up a hill.
And it was a forested area?
Yes.
Jungle?
But jungle, but all the leaves that had been struck off the trees with the shelling overnight, burnt off. They're like stalks. And as I climbed up, I noticed these lads, very zombie-like, dazed. Then, of course, I met the casualties, the dead, Japanese dead, our lads dead. Shell holes and devastation.
What was your reaction at this point? What did you...
Stunned. And I said to somebody, where's your battalion headquarters? I don't know who it was. And he just pointed to this particular hump in the ground. And I went in there, and Colonel Theobald was in, and Captain Steele, the adjutant. And the first, sorry, it wasn't Captain Steele, it was Captain Clegg, adjutant. And the first thing Captain Clegg said to me was, how in the hell are you getting up here, Sergeant? Well, so I climbed up, meaning that from the hill, you know. So, as I've been sent by the Divvy Commander, Captain Buick, with a requisition, what you want, in the way of supplies. So, okay, then, just hang on, sort of thing. And the Padre was there as well. And the Padre had a compo tin. That's a tin which is used for carrying rations. You know, compo tin. And in the compo tin, I noticed there was wristwatches and rings. And the Padre was writing this list out. And when I glanced over his shoulder, it was a list of their killed, dead. And he was going on. I was good heavens to myself. And of course, after being there about half an hour, I got the requisition of Captain Clegg. And the big demand was for water and ammunition. Water priority. Now then, the Padre asked me when I left if I take this tin back to be echelon for safekeeping, because there was men's property in it. And he gave me this list of the dead to be taken back and sent back to records. So I sent him to come back, and again I came under fire. And when I arrived back at battalion headquarters at Bieschlung, Captain Bjork was waiting, but the duty commander had gone. Now then, the requisition was for water and ammunition. But the vehicles hadn't arrived from Dimapur. So we had no means of getting the rations and ammunition up. I had to go back to Dimapur to get the carriers up. Because I reported that the road was under fire. And he said, can we get the rations up with the armoured ambulance? That was up in Bieschlung. I said, we'll try that, the armoured ambulance. So we put water and ammunition, which is against the Geneva Convention, but again, the Jap wasn't observing the rules either. And we got so far up, and again, we come under mortar fire, and the ambulance driver reversed back. He wouldn't go any further, which I don't blame him, because he went up through slits. He reversed him back and come back. And you couldn't blame him. And again, he wouldn't have gotten past the bullock. So, Bjork says, right, we'll have to get the REs on to get this bullock shifted. But I said, even the carriers will not get rounded. So I went back to get the carriers, fetched them up, which took quite a while, because it was 40 miles, that was like 80 miles for me. The carriers wasn't a very fast vehicle. And they arrived at dusk, the carriers, which was too late to go up. Had to be put off the next day. So that was 2 days of the time was up water ammunition, or very low on water and ammunition. And apart from that, we couldn't get the casualties evacuated off the hill, because the armed ambulance couldn't get up.
There was no way of getting them out, getting supplies up under the cover of darkness?
No, because what men they had was required to man the positions. And it was about a mile back from Kahima to Bieschlung. It was taking a hell of a lot of men. If they manhandled it, as for vehicles, again, the noise, because he already had his lines fixed on me. So next morning, they load up the carriers. Then this bulldozer came in. And he went up, and he bulldozed the carcass over the side into the cud, and he got the military medal. Chap with REs. He came back and reported that the road was clear. Fair enough. We set off with the carriers, and I told the leading carrier, I says, no, I'll take us up slow, and when you see me wave, you'll know I'm under fire. I'll shoot off. And I says, go like hell. And I says, I'll be waiting for you at the top to stop you in case you overshoot your mark, like I did. So this worked out all right.
Did you come under fire?
Yes.
Were any of the carriers hit?
I shot up. I waved to them. I'd come under fire. And the carriers did the same. They shot away. Got the top. Jumped off the bike. And when I jumped off the bike, I come under fire again. Which hadn't happened the first time. I thought myself, this is handy. This is the stopping point for the carriers. So I had to go back about 50 yards short to where I thought they were undercover and stop them. And I ran out and stopped them. Right, quick, get off. And I don't know who this bloke was to this day. I wish I could remember. The first carriage driver, he says, Sergeant, what are we going to do with him? He's dead. His mate, Bren gunner in the front, being shot right through the head. Of course, the car's an open vehicle. They were shooting down, you see. I says, take him back to Echelon when we offload. And I cannot for the world think of me who those two men were, the man was killed or the man was driving. And I tried to find out. But anyhow, we got them offloaded, the carriers. But the battalion sent men down for tick parties down to cope the ammunition water. Because we're badly in need of it, and by the hell of a state. And I went to Witham, the fatigue party. I chased the carriers back, and I went to Witham fatigue party to see Captain Clegg, the adjutant, to see what else was required.
This is back at B Echelon now you're talking about?
No, I'm Kahima.
Kahima, right.
Captain Clegg, the adjutant. I went up from the roadside with a fatigue party. Because I was on the line of communication with the battalion in division headquarters, anybody else. The battalion was isolated, and I was on the lines of communication. The wires was cut, the wireless sets had been smashed, and I therefore had to see Clegg to see what the situation was. And I volunteered to stay on the hill that night.
Could you say that the casualties had increased since the last time you've been there?
I hadn't noticed them. Because the second time I went up, the casualties had been cleared. Somebody had gone into the MI room, reception, you know, and some had been buried. And it wasn't half as bad. You know, things were sort of tidied up.
What sort of defensive position did the DLI battalion have on Kahima?
Very poor, because the Royal West Kents, as I say, weren't prepared for it. And they were just like open slit trenches. And, of course, a lot of these trenches had dead bodies in, Royal West Kents and Japs, which meant that the battalion had to more or less dig fresh positions. But, again, they didn't have a great lot of chance, because the first day the battalion went on the hill, there was an onslaught. As I say...
That's what you saw, weren't you?
There was an onslaught. You see, they didn't have much chance to do anything. The whole battalion was depleted.
So they were basically living in slit trenches and
Just living in slit. Anything. As a matter of fact, there was one bloke overnight lay behind a dead Jap for cover. Overnight. Lay behind a dead Jap. And as I say, I went up and saw Clegg. And again, he gave me a requisition. And I asked him, I says, is there any point me staying on the hill tonight? I said, I can fetch my men up, because I could see they were right down the bottom. And he says, no, Sergeant. He says, the trouble is, we are too congested. He says, too many men on the hill to start with. He said, we've realised that now. So it'd be pointless you reinforcing us. He says, your men will do a good job ferrying the stuff up.
What did he mean by that, that there were too many men on the hill to start off with?
Well, you see, they hadn't gotten deployed, hadn't had time to deploy to the defensive positions. And they were all less huddled together. And we didn't exactly know the situation of the Jap, because Kahima was a series of hills. You had FSD Ridge. You had Picket Hill. You had the tennis courts. You had Hospital Hill. Cookie's Picket. And you didn't know exactly where the fire was coming from, and the men couldn't get deployed. And more or less the whole battalion was on the hill for a few days, only such times as the men were properly deployed. And as he said, so I said, okay, and I followed the carriers down. Well, going down, this time, we didn't come under any fire, like I had coming back on the first mission. And this, to me, troubled me to some extent, as I thought it was rather funny, we haven't come under any fire. And again, we carried the same operation next day. But the next day, boy, the first carrier got round the bend. It was blown to smithereens. I got past it. And which blocked the road and meant the other carriers couldn't get up. He had his fixed sights on us now, you see. His artillery was on us now. And of course, I reported this to the adjutant. And he says, I had a conference with a CO, and I took a dispatch back and gave it to Captain Buick. And it was a request for the tanks. Now, the tanks had been lying back at Dimapur It was understood they wouldn't be required for Kohima because it wasn't suitable territory for tank warfare, but we would be needing them later on after we got past Kohima. And they were lying thick and easy at Dimapur. So I had to go back and see the brigade commander with a dispatch to get the tanks up next day. Well, the tanks, again, much slower than the carriers. It took some time to get them up.
Did you have to go all the way back to Dimapur to get
the tanks up?
So this is another very, very long round trip, in other words.
And back again. Well, we got the tanks up. But the tanks were so confined, you couldn't get much. First of all, we thought we'll get the ammunition and in the tanks and we'll fetch the wounded back on top of the tanks. But you couldn't get much stuff in the tanks in the way of food and ammunition. And the casualties was too bad to be strewn across. So what they did, they lined the tanks up as best as they could at strategic points along the road, the bends in the road, where they could get the elevation. And as our casualties were going up, the tanks, the artillery, pumped shells at the side of the hill to keep the heads down. Now, this worked out, but we didn't take the tanks up. We took a fleet of armoured ambulances up. I'm saying the fleet, we took six armoured ambulances up. You see, because we wanted to get the casualties out, because this was become demoralising for the lads. And when we got the ambulances up, then, again, we didn't use the tanks. We used the carriers. The tanks were fully engaged, pumping lead into the side of the hill. And it worked.
How long did that operation last?
3 days.
Of the tanks firing into the hill?
Into the hill, for 3 days. Before we declared that the road clear for vehicles. 3 days it lasted. 3 days the battalion was out of communication. It was just a DR, dispatch rider, keeping the road open.
How many dispatch riders were there?
Well, that particular point was only me, because I wouldn't let my blokes do it.
Why not?
Well, in the first place, after the first trip, I knew exactly where the danger spots was, you see. And I knew where I had to stop at yon end. These lads didn't, and I think I was taking too big of a risk. As it turned out, it worked out all right. See, because it meant that if I sent this lad up, I couldn't very well explain to him what part of the road he'd come under fire. Like they said, I couldn't explain the car. I just had to wave and let them know that they'll be coming under fire. And again, I couldn't guarantee these two men doing the same job as they did with me. Them two men might have been moved to another position and didn't have that sort of observation. Those were things to consider. I thought, well, what's the point in sending these lads? And of course, these lads were much older than me. They were old soldiers, reservists, who spent time on the Northwest Front here and that, you know, older men, not families. So I thought, well, me having the knowledge of the route, I better do it.
Did you have much rest in over this period of 4 or 5
oh,
days?
Oh, I had the rest during the night. Because this mission was kind of during the day, and I had plenty of food, because my base was back at the echelon. I asked Captain Clegg if he'd let me and men come on the hill. The only alternative was to go back to the echelon. Well, at the echelon, there's plenty of food there, and you got plenty of rest. You weren't under any threat, except for artillery fire, but at that particular time, we hadn't been spotted. You see, we're quite happy at the echelon.
If you hadn't being told to stay back at Dinapur waiting for the transport to arrive, would you in fact have been with the battalion headquarters?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you feel about actually not being there at the beginning of the action and during the action?
I felt I was pretty lucky. Damned lucky. And I often make it known to the lads when I'm talking that I never went through the ordeal they went through. Like McLean. You see, I had a cushy time of it, me.
Did you feel at all guilty about that?
Yes, guilty. But mind you, at the same time, it's only recently that I realised that the men on the hill appreciate what I was doing. For instance, when I went to York, to the reunion at York, that's when I discovered it was these two lads, the two Scousers, McAvoy and Nolan from Liverpool, two Scousers. Just last year when I went to a reunion, we were sitting having a drink, and they told me, you know, they said, because, you see, when a proposed sergeant goes into action, it's a general thing that he gets shot in the back. It's a recognised thing. That bastard was shooting the first chance we get. Didn't appeal to me, that. That's a lot of rubbish. You hear tell men have been shot in the back. Nobody gets shot in the back. And so our sister Nolan, happily, because these two lads, Nolan and McAvoy, had been in detention two or three times because they were two tearaways. You know, they'd been in detention. They knew me well. And I just happened to say to them, well, I says, you never got a chance to shoot us, did you? Is that what we did? We could have shot you the first day. And that's how it came out. He says, we put the...